Hey friends, welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. Before we get into today's episode, I gotta tell you about Kettlebell Social. It's here. Kettlebell Social is my newly revamped online strength training program and community for women who like to do hard things but are trying to be more chill in their approach to fitness. It's opening for enrollment September 18th, 2023. So depending on when you're listening to this, you can go to the link in the show notes and either get yourself on the interest list or just sign up and join us. Here's the deal. Your workouts are meant to enhance your life, not consume it. You maybe love to work out, but like you have a whole ass life to live outside of the gym. You're so over using exercise to shrink yourself, and you love feeling like a badass, but you also need it to be fun and flexible and free. And you're ready to start questioning the arbitrary rules around fitness and stop following advice that wasn't meant for you. If this sounds like you, we're your people. Come play inside of Kettlebell Social. You can check out the link in the show notes for more info. Welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. I'm your host, Jenna Josephowski, but you can call me Jenna J. I'm a semi-retired professional dancer, dance teacher, and yoga teacher turned certified personal trainer and kettlebell instructor who helps active women learn to lift and get strong with equal parts challenge and compassion. After years of working in the fitness industry, I got sick and tired of watching people, including myself, run themselves into the ground trying to uphold the narrow-minded image of what our culture sees as healthy and fit. But instead of giving it all up, I decided that I'd rather change the game, call out the BS, extract the good, and help others learn to use movement as a way to build themselves up rather than tear themselves down. On this podcast, we'll explore the intersection of fitness and anti-diet culture and all the gray areas in between. We'll let go of shoulds and judgments and dig into tough conversations with curiosity. Things get pretty spicy around here, so grab your headphones and let's do this. Hey friends, welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. I am really excited for today's episode with my friend Angel Casas, who is a weight inclusive personal trainer and a DEI activist in the fitness and health space. His background is in the real estate and insurance industry, but when COVID hit, he decided to start a fitness business dedicated to helping people lose weight since he himself had lost over 100 pounds. Spoiler alert, that's not where this episode is going. He wanted to teach others how to do it as well. However, through helping people lose weight, it brought a light to his own disordered relationship with food and fitness. He admitted himself into an eating disorder treatment center, which was where he learned about all things related to diet culture, fat phobia, white supremacy, and so many other systems of oppression. This eye-opening experience made him realize how harmful and racist diet culture is, particularly for Black, Brown, and Indigenous and people of color. He now teaches his clients about how to connect to their bodies through intuitive eating and joyful movement, and therefore reclaiming the power that was originally robbed from them. And I originally met Angel in real life this summer, actually, because I believe we connected over an Instagram post, and I was like, no way! Another anti-diet trainer in the Chicago area. We need to hang out in real life. And so we did. And as I mentioned in the episode, this is actually the first time I am having a man on the podcast, but I feel like Angel brings a lot of really important and much needed perspectives on a lot of different things, including eating disorder recovery, the intersection of eating disorders, homosexuality, and religious trauma, destigmatizing mental health, toxic masculinity, and just navigating what it is like to be a personal trainer inhabiting a larger body. This is such a great episode, and I know you're going to love Angel and this conversation. So let's go ahead and get right into it. Hey, Angel, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Jenna J, how's it going?
It's good. I'm excited to talk to you today. We recently just connected in real life as fellow anti-diet personal trainers in Chicago. And I'm pumped to talk to you because, first of all, you're the first dude I've ever had on my podcast before.
I feel so honored. Yes.
And you have such an interesting perspective to share about all of this. And I think just a lot of stuff that needs to be heard. So do you want to give us like a quick intro, who you are, what you do?
Sure. Oh my God. Yeah. Thank you so much. So I'm a certified personal trainer. I'm a weight inclusive personal trainer. I've had my business for about 4 years now. I started during COVID times. My background is actually in finance, but when COVID hit and everything shut down, I decided to start doing my own thing, which just led to me. It started out as a weight loss business, and it opened me to getting seeking for help because I realized that I had a disorder relationship with food and fitness. And that just took me to learn everything about, diet culture and white supremacy and fat phobia. And it just caused me to rebrand the entire business, no more of the weight loss stuff. Now we focus on what actually really matters, which is intuitive movement, and intuitive eating, reconnecting with our bodies, reclaiming that power that was taken from us. So that's where I'm at right now.
Awesome. Will you share, if you don't mind, a little bit about your eating disorder experience and how you finally decided you needed treatment and what that was like for you?
Yeah, for sure. So what's really interesting is I did not have language for it back then, but starting my own weight loss business just exacerbated my eating disorder. Like I was crazy restricting because once I took on this personal training business, you have this idea of the image of what a personal trainer looks like, and I have to fit that model or else I'm a fraud. This is the story in my head. So to get there, I was doing just insane amount of exercise, insane amount of running, and then after tons of restriction, going into binging, right? And it was a complete cycle going on. And I also noticed it around me. I noticed it in other people. I noticed it in the fitness space. And so I started to, it's like something is going on with this relationship. And then I was driving by, ERC, Eating Recovery Center, every day to work. And when I saw them, I'm like, I need to reach out for help. I reached out for help. I did an assessment. They're like, you definitely have an eating disorder. You definitely have. And it was just really interesting because I've been fighting for this diagnosis for a while, but nobody would listen to me because I didn't look like the typical person that goes in for an eating disorder, which is usually a thin, woman. And so when I went there, I mean, I'm so honored. It was an incredible experience. It was 8 weeks of intense, just 3 hours every day after work. And it's just deep. I mean, what I found really interesting was I went in there thinking, okay, what do you possibly teach me about macros that I don't already know? I have studied this information, all of it. I was like, I geeked and nerded out on everything to do with the body and calories and weight loss. What can you possibly teach me that I haven't already figured out? Well, it was nothing about nutrition, like 5% maybe, and it was 95% about your feelings, everything that had to do with feelings and emotions around food. And I'm so grateful for all of the support that I got. I read so many people that have a negative experience with eating disorder spaces. I think I was really grateful that they acknowledge a lot of their white privilege, because most of all treatment, what's the word I'm looking for?
Professionals,
Leadership. So all the treatment counselors, right? Everyone is mostly a thin, white, cisgender woman. Which is really hard because you just, once you start to dismantle this thing and realize how racist it is, right? Like the root of it is racism. You're like, where's my people? Why isn't my people up here in leadership talking to me about, like the discrimination that we experience as people of color? But the experience was nonetheless really great. And then once, like I, even while I was in there, I started to rebrand everything because I just realized there needs to be more people of color representation in the ED space. Just what really has excited me to keep going in this journey.
It's kind of nuts how, like, when you first become a personal trainer, I think a lot of us do what you did, which is number one, feeling like you have to quote unquote look the part, but then also like nerding out over this stuff. And we tell ourselves the story that we're doing it like in service of our clients. But I think a lot of us come into this because we secretly somehow think that it will, help us transform ourselves. And I think it's really awesome that you were able to discover that you needed help so quickly and that you were able to have a good experience with that.
I appreciate that. I think for me, being obsessed over being thin has just been of my life. I think being in this space wakes you up to like I was in diet culture 24/7. And we just have those pressures that you're talking about, before we become trainers and then a lot more after becoming trainers.
Yeah. Can you share a little bit more about your experience with the intersection of eating disorders and homosexuality and religious trauma? Because those are
Oh.
all things that definitely made up a lot of your history. And I
Yes,
can get into
yes.
that a little bit more, but that's a uniquely different experience that's not talked about enough. So
I
tell us
appreciate
more.
that. You know, I'm excited because I finally have language for this. I just never had the language before. I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness. I was raised in a cult religion. And our lives just were centered around God and being a good person and trying to, when Armageddon's coming around the corner, that we can go into paradise, right? So like now that I have language for it, it started as a kid. You know, as a kid, I had all this shame because I had a lot of curiosity towards like the male anatomy, right? And I had this sexual attraction, but there was no Grindr, there was nobody to talk about being gay. I didn't know a gay person, you know? So for me, all I had was the books they gave us, and the books they gave us said sin was that being homosexual was a horrible thing. It was the worst sin ever. So for me, I started to use food, you know, as a child, you know, to cope for all with all the pain. So I have all the memories of me and my mom dieting. She's asking me to diet with her, you know, invites me to exercise because, you know, we both have struggled with our weight. And I think, you know, I came out later in life at 26, but to be a good person to get into paradise, I had to do all the things that the culture and the religion wanted, which was get married and have kids. So I didn't know. I was like, if I get married, you know, if I have sex with a woman, then I will finally be cured. So I got married. I was not cured. I was like, what happened? You know, oh my God, all this that I went through. So it was really traumatic. And you know, I got excommunicated for the church, and it took me 7 years of living in between being in the church, out the church, because when they disfellowship you, you can't speak to any of your family members, you can't speak to anybody.
What?
Yes. And you also can't make friends with the outside world because the outside world are full of, you know, heathens. So like it is this crazy mind fuck of imprisonment that they keep you in. It's super
I
traumatizing.
feel like we could have a whole
I know, right?
nother episode about how you managed to get yourself out of that, because that's a whole.
You know, you when I have language for now, but I was insanely brainwashed. I was insanely controlled. I mean, they dangle this carrot in front of you that if you don't repent and come back, then you're going to die and never be with your family members again. I mean, the promise that they give you is that you're going to be living forever with all the family members that, you know, have repented and honored Jehovah and blah, 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 right? And I mean, it's powerful. It's powerful stuff. And they say, if you betray any of our rules, we'll kick you out, right? So you're like, you live in this fear all the time of, am I doing something bad, right? With like all this morality that you assign. I started to realize, you know, you do it with food as well because it comes from the church, you know, just understanding that there's so much pressure for you to be a good person. And what the fuck is a good person, you know?
Right. And there's so much when you talk about this, that it's the thing that I always say, it's like another flavor of the same shit sandwich. And a lot of people, I think, and I'm not sure if this was your experience, replace that like structure and dogma of an organized religion and almost turn food and a certain way of eating and a certain way of exercising into a religion.
You know, I have like in these last few months, I've been following a lot of Gloria Lucas work, which she talks a lot about in the intersections of eating disorders and religious trauma. She was also raised as a Jehovah's Witness, you know, also left. And she made that connection for me for the first time. And it just blew my mind that I replaced, you know, worshiping Jehovah for worshiping, you know, healthism, you know, everything diet culture, because you just, it's the same set of the, you know, of this, of the shit sandwich, because you're repeating the same process all over again, which is super unhealthy, which is placing your salvation outside of you, when in reality, we don't need to, you know, ask for salvation. Like we are beautiful creatures as we are, and all the love comes from the inside, you know, it's not externally.
And is this because I know nothing about being a Jehovah's Witness or the differences between that and other, I guess, like high demand religions, but was it frowned upon for you to ask questions or to question things about the church's teachings?
If you ever get a chance on Netflix, there is a High Control Religion series, like 6 episodes. Watch them. They blow your mind. Like how they
Wait, what's
actually,
it called?
I think it's called Cults. It's
Okay.
the Netflix. It's like it blew my mind because I stopped gaslighting myself. You know,
Yeah.
they keep you so controlled. You have to go to church 3 times a week. You have to do Bible study. You have to go knock on doors. No birthdays, no holidays. And then there's a leadership of older men who lead the congregation, and they cannot be questioned. You know, if something doesn't make sense, they're saying you're actually not being spiritual. You're not being a good brother, not being a good sister. And then they dangle that carrot, right? And they say, we're going to kick you out if you don't behave, right? Like it's insane psychological warfare that happens. But when you're in there, you think you're the chosen ones. You think you're the ones who are going to go to paradise. So you obey. You're so afraid all the time. Yeah. Which I was talking to my therapist. That does crazy stuff to your nervous system, you know?
Right. Well, and it even thinks, because I'm not sure when this episode will air, in comparison to the one that I'm talking about, but my friend Christina and I that do we do these like crossover just for fun collab episodes where we talk about random shit that has kind of nothing to do with the work that we do. But we were recently talking about Shiny Happy People. Have you seen that documentary? I think it's on Amazon Prime. I think it's on Amazon Prime Video. It's about that family, the Duggars. The show was called 19 Kids and Counting, and they were like in a very similar kind of religious experience. And one of my big takeaways, like it really, for me at least, when I hear you tell that story, it really gives me like a little bit of compassion for the people who are in that. And by the same token, I just had like a mind-blowing moment right now. When I talk about like I don't hate the dieter, it's like diet culture. So when I talk about that, like same, like it helps me kind of humanize this whole situation where it's like, oh, these people are actually like they're not the problem. It's the system that is controlling them that is the problem. And we could say that about so many things.
I mean, it's so hard. My own parents, right? They're still deep in the religion. They
Are
just
they?
ask. We don't communicate, and
Wow.
they are firm that being a homosexual is a sin, you know. And I've cried, you know, I've cried so much in front of them and to them, and like, love me, accept me, and like, no, you know, Jehovah, like they're like dead fast in their ways of this is the way that, you know, it's supposed to be. And you're like, and you see it also with dieters, right? Like you see
Yeah.
that there's no way in hell you're gonna tell them that fat is, you know, a good thing, you know, like fat people need to lose weight, all fat, you know. Even in treatment, like people would not let go of the ideology that health doesn't have a look. You know, they're like,
Yeah.
well, fat people are definitely unhealthy, they need to lose weight. And you think to yourself, oh my God, we're so hooked to these systems that just abuse us, monetize, you know, off of us, and just keep us as repeat business for them, you know. And
Yeah.
but like, you're so right. Like whether it was, you know, the religious system or, you know, this other system, once you subscribe to it, you're very fucking hooked, you know, and it's very difficult to unhook.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit with you about this idea of fat phobia and that fear of gaining weight, especially like going through eating disorder recovery and how that shows up for you in your life.
Yeah, you know, this word was super interesting to me because I have had such a traumatic relationship with the word fat, right? As a kid, I always had to go to the Husky section for suits, you know, and my parents went to like the regular, you know, clothes. So, like, I have lots of trauma over being a bigger body. My mom has a lot of body shame throughout her whole life. So, I had a lot of fat shame growing up. I learned fat was a very negative thing, it was very derogatory. And then I come and start to do this work, right? And I start realizing what is fat phobia, right? And it is the fear of getting fat, right? And or the fear of fat people, all things. So I took this quiz and I just wanted to see how fat phobic I was. Like, take this quiz and you'll get a number, right? And it's like, I think the highest was like 178 points. And they do the questions the way you can't figure out what the point system is, right? I
Yeah.
take the quiz, guess what I got?
What?
178.
The wow.
And my mind, like, I am so insanely fat phobic. And I start realizing if I'm fat phobic, like, what do I think of myself? Right. And I think
Yeah.
person, I think that, you know, I need to lose weight. Like, it starts to now click in. Oh, okay. This is how all the machines work together to create, right, this like self-shame generator, you know, that just being horrible about all these things. So I started to realize, you know, things like fat people are beautiful. Oh, wow, that feels different. I've never heard that. I've never said that before. You start to, once you realize health doesn't have a look, right? And you start to, it for me, it has been a journey of accepting all types of people without having to fix anybody. You know, we have the
Yeah.
need to look at somebody, whatever that is we want to do, and fix them, right? Like that person needs to lose weight, or that person needs to go on a diet. And realizing like that needed to first start with me. Like it needed to start internally because there's so much programming in my body that fat is bad, that it's just so harmful when it's not true, you know? And connecting with that part of inside of me to work through that, I think is like the hardest part, you know, in this journey, and then helping others do the same.
Right. And I think it's a lot easier. I mean, I don't want to speak for your experience, but to look at your clients and be like, you don't need to be fixed. You're not a problem to be fixed. And find that exception for them and their bodies and where they are. Sometimes we're so much harsher on ourselves. I think like that internalized fat phobia can still be very real. Almost like that, it's okay for other people. But like not for me, because I'm special.
Yeah, what's fascinating is that everybody does it, right? Like we live in a super fat phobic society, right? And you know, even as you have the conversation with clients, like, you know, I'm a weight inclusive personal trainer, I don't subscribe to diet culture, we won't be, you know, dieting here, we won't be weighing in. They still are very confused. Like it's very hard for them to understand like what it means to work out without metrics, you know, like without, you know, dying at the end of the session. Like it's a whole different experience that for me, when I'm communicating to them, you know, what are your goals, right? Not the results, not the weight loss, not all that. What are your actual goals? It's hard for them to just wrap around because everybody just wants to lose body fat. Like everybody just wants to lose weight is what they think when they reach out for fitness support.
And a lot of times, this is something that I often speak to clients about is to get curious about like the why behind that. Because if you dig a little bit deeper underneath that, there's most often more specific things. Kind of like, you know how you hear the phrase like fat is not a feeling?
Course.
And I don't know how you felt when you first heard that phrase. I felt very much like, fuck you, I feel fat today. Like,
Same 100%. Like it's
and
definitely for me.
it's hard to wrap your brain around, but when you figure out and get more specific, like, oh, I'm actually feeling tired today, or I'm actually feeling uncomfortable because the waistband of my pants is digging into my stomach, or I'm feeling out of breath after going up those stairs and I don't like that. Those specific things can be accounted for in a more specific way. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, of course. I think we're just not taught to connect to our bodies, right? We're
Right.
taught to be very metric centric. You know, weight loss equals health, which means that all I'm here to do is just lose weight, right? That's the focus. But exactly, when you dig deeper, you're like, what about getting your groceries? What about going up the stairs without pain? What about that, you know, back pain, you know, that neck pain? And, you know, what about our strength goals? And when you start asking those questions, like, yeah, I want those. Let's work on that. You know, I tell people, don't come to the gym to work out. Come to practice a skill. You know, like we're going to practice deadlifting. We're going to practice back squatting. We're going to practice, you know, a chest pressing. But getting them to make that switch, yeah, it's, you know, they're very, very focused on the numbers.
Yeah. And it's, oh, man, I could go in so many different directions with this, but oh, man, I guess what was it like for you like to gain weight as a personal trainer, like as the
All right, let's do this.
person?
You know, it's just harder for me to talk about just because I'm doing so much healing in my journey. But
And don't feel like you have to talk about anything you don't feel comfortable talking about.
sure, no, absolutely. I appreciate so much, you know, the space to share about this. So for me, you know, when I started the personal training business, I had lost 100 pounds, but I've lost 100 pounds multiple times, you know. And I was like, what is the way for me to keep this off? Let me go ahead and do all things fitness, right? Become a personal trainer, eat, breathe, and die, you know, and then you're going to be cured. But to me, I was still at a heavy weight. I still need another 40 pounds to lose. As I'm doing this business, you know, and I have language for it now, my eating disorder is out of control and I start gaining weight. Once I start seeing myself gaining weight, I'm like, what's happening? You know, I am abusing exercise. I'm in a lot of pain. And I say, I'm going to reach out for help. As I reach out for help, I just start gaining and gaining more weight. After treatment, I practice intuitive eating. So if you be when you practice it, you know, your weight will fluctuate, right? Because you're connecting with all things in your body. So I now I'm in a bigger body and showing up to work to train clients, showing up to the gym. It's really difficult. You know, there's so much fat phobia, and you're doing a lot of internalized, you know, work for your own internalized fat phobia. And I want to show up authentically. You know, I believe in everything that I've learned, but the world is still really cruel and nasty, you know, and there's a lot of microaggressions. There's a lot of, you know, body checking me. There's a lot of, you know, curious as to how are you a personal trainer if you're in a bigger body? That makes no sense at all. But to me, I would just say my therapy has saved me. Therapy is my love. You know, I have been able to process a lot of, you know, what does that message mean to me, right? So that I'm able to connect more with my body. And also just following a lot of different, you know, IG, you know, personal trainers and bigger bodies is just super inspiring as well, you know, to feel like you're not alone in this journey, because I think, you know, the message that I'm trying to, you know, convey to others is just be you, you know, like you need to be fixed. Like you don't believe the crap that everyone's telling you, just be you. Whatever you are, whatever you value, do that. If that's, you know, movement, if that is, you know, your hobbies, the things that you love, being just yourself, because that's literally what society tries to do from you and just strip you of your identity to control you and monetize off of you. So for me, you know, working through a lot of, you know, me in a bigger body, everything is different, your movement is different. But just really stop what generates for me the eating disorders of shame. So for me, working and addressing the shame and saying you're beautiful the way you are, right? Your body, you know, practice more than anything, more than body positivity. I practice body respect, which is this body has been the only body that's been there for me the entire time through thick and thin, right? My body has not abandoned me. So starting to see your body as something really grateful for, I feel like has helped me a lot, you know, bottom line.
And do you feel like once you've been in recovery and in this body and living your life in a way where you're not so obsessive over food and exercise, do you actually feel like you're healthier as a result?
Us, this which is fascinating, you know, Jordan. Let me tell you, my mental health is so much better, right? Because I've worked through all the shame around food and the emotions. I'm working through it. My relationship with fitness has changed so much where I've only used fitness in a very abusive way. I've had a very abusive relationship with fitness. I've done marathons, triathlons, competitions, and it's all been in the way name of weight loss. Now, when I go practice movement, it's like for my body to feel good. You know, like I love, love, love being under the bar. There's something really beautiful when that bar is on your back, you know, and you're squatting that you just feel so powerful. So for me now, reconnecting with food and fitness feels so much better. My mental health is better. I feel way healthier always. You know, like I've never had any health markers that were negative, no matter if I was in a smaller or bigger body. But for me, the ones that truly matter, which is true love and joy for the sport versus an obsession over a result that it must be attained or else you're not good enough. So,
I remember because we were out to lunch last Monday and we were talking about your experience going for a run by the lake recently. And you can share a little bit about that if you wanted to, but I really resonated with that because I used to run by the lake. I was probably my most disordered around the time that I was living by the lake, and I would like force myself. I remember one day, like the weather was awful. It was like so windy, it was practically like sleeting. And it was starting to get dark, and I had no business being down there, but like I had to get that run in. And my body felt awful. You know what I mean? Like it just didn't feel good. But to contrast that with like the experience that you describe of going down there and enjoying the weather and like checking in with your body and going at a pace that felt really good, and you still like got in a really solid run.
yeah, you know, I love that you say that because for me, you know, there's so much toxic masculinity for me in the demands that I made my body do, right? Like you have do a specific schedule of running. You had to do, 3 to 6 miles. I would do 4 times a week. And I did not care if I wasn't feeling good, if I was injured, if I was in pain, if I was, I was like, you need willpower, you need discipline, you have to do this. And you're miserable while you're doing it, but then you wear this badge of honor of I did it. So like I need to be celebrated, right? And you're only celebrated if you did your 6 miles. My watch, like I lived and died by my watch, my steps, my calories, my heart rate, distance, time. It's just you lose so much of the joy when you have to be subjected to so much of the rules, So, like for me, this time going to the lakefront, like the lakefront has had, a lot of trauma for me because I've had a very abusive, relationship with myself there. But I love the lake. I love the water, I'm Pisces sign, I love being connected with water. And this time I took off the watch, I took off the watch and because I couldn't, my entire runs have been always based on what the watch is saying. So like, oh, and push faster, oh, move it, pick up the pace. This time you're doing it and you're like, well, if I don't have a watch, what the fuck do I pay attention to then? And you're like, oh shit, oh, I can see things. Oh, look at my feet. Oh, okay. I feel a little bit pulling the hamstring, oh, my lower back feels a little tight. Why is that? Let's pull over and stretch. And you're like, oh my God, this is what love feels like for a sport. Nothing to do with metrics. And to me, what a much more beautiful journey than always talking about how many miles you did, what was your pace, what was your distance, and just saying, I got out to the lakefront, I got connected with creator and source, and I feel so good because of that. And my body is so grateful that I've had movement and my mental health feels better. And boom, and period. And that's it. And it's beautiful, not center around. For me, Jenna J, every time I would be done with one of those long runs, I would weigh myself immediately. I lose any weight, I would go back and run some more. Like, it's just mind-boggling how addicted you are to metrics when you're just deep into diet culture.
Can we jump back to that toxic masculinity bit that we were talking about? Because you mentioned a couple of times your experience with therapy and how your mental health is so much better. Can we talk about how that's sort of stigmatized, particularly for men and even more particularly for men of color?
You're speaking about therapy, you said? What was the
Well,
question?
therapy, like working on your mental health, the way
Oh,
that toxic masculinity kind of hurts everybody, like
yeah. You know what's so interesting, Jenna J, is I have been to higher levels of care for mental health, when my mental health has just been so bad. And I've had through so much trauma that I've had to work through. And anytime that I go to any space for mental health, higher level of care, I'm usually the only male there. Like, and I'm usually like all the only person of color, definitely, and one of two, males. And you just realize like we're all human in that room. We're all going through the same shit. It doesn't matter what gender, you are. Like, we all have come to adulthood with hard stuff, just eating disorders. So for me, I realized, just growing up, we don't talk about therapy. Therapy is just something for white people. This is what we're taught. It's very stigmatized in our culture. Like, this is, I would get that's what you have God for. To me, I would love to see more men. I would love to see more people of color. When I think about the line of therapy, it's like people of color are all the way in the back, and like all the way further back are like, men, And it's like, how do I help normalize it? And there's a great foundation here in Chicago, Coffee Hip Hop and Mental
I
Health.
was just about to say, and mention them.
Love going to his events. I love going to, he offers therapy for men, on Sundays. And it's just really beautiful to see a collection of men coming together, being vulnerable and sharing their feelings. And it's just also wild because we're just not raised this way. We're raised, in my culture, we los hombres no lloran, men don't cry, we suck it up, we're leaders. Our family depends on us. Emotions are weakness. Emotions make you vulnerable, to other people. So for me, getting all the help that I've got, I'm so grateful that I pushed through all that because I would never be able to be where I am at today had I not been able to get therapy, And think about the same for other, men as well. The
And I'm
hurt.
thinking about, sorry,
Yeah.
go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, I just think about the hurt that they're in, that they don't realize that how that hurt's going to get helped is through mental health, you know, going to
And I'm
therapy.
thinking about what a gift that is, like to your partner, but also to your kids.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I appreciate so much, like, you always beat yourself up as a parent. Am I a good enough father, you know? And I realize that there's so many different ways that you can measure that, right? You can answer that so many ways. But for me, the greatest gift that I'm able to give them, you know, is hold space for their emotions without judging them. You know,
Yeah.
taught so much that we need to control our children. At least I was raised this way, right? Like,
Yep.
I used to believe that I had to take care of my parents when they got older, that, you know, I was my parents, like I had a they were living their life through me, their dreams through me, that I had to be live my life according to how they wanted to receive their love and approval. With my kids, it's the whole opposite. You know, I'm like,
Yeah.
I want you to explore the world. I want you to try different things. I want you to study abroad. I want you to be curious. I was shamed for my own curiosity all the time, right? It's horrible.
Yeah.
I'm like, bring me your questions. Tell me what you want to talk about. This is a safe space. I talk about what a safe space is. I normalize conversations that are really uncomfortable, like talking about sex, girl. Like, that is so hard. I did not have any model, you know, for how to do that.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, that, and, you know, with my partner as well, just having language for your emotions is to
Yeah.
me beautiful, versus you just don't, and then manifest it in anger and hate and hurt and pain and shame. So yeah, that for that, I'm super grateful for therapy.
Yeah. Oh, so good. Gosh, I have so many things that I want to talk to you about. I guess, not to switch gears too much, but like coming back to the idea of recovery, what does that look like for you now, like in food, in
Yeah.
movement, and also like not just how that shows up for you, but how that showed up on a larger scale for your business and the way you work with your clients.
Yeah. You know, I think for me, I'm trying to make peace with food and my body, you know, just body be, and stop trying to let all these narratives of what I should do, or how things should be, and just letting things be. So for me, just connecting with movement, connecting with running again. You know, I want to run a marathon. I want to start training for one. This will be the first time that I'm going to start training without any metrics, right? And I'm, you know, train based on like how far I see, you know, a post or something like that. So for me, that affects so much of my business, because, you know, I've shared everything that I'm learning with my clients, you know, and saying to them, hey, listen, we're going to work out. We're going to listen to our body. If something's hurting, we're going to stop. We're going to switch it. We're going to modify it. You know, always meeting them where they're at and showing that compassion is a beautiful thing. Instead of, you know, we see it so much in the fitness space, you know, you need to do X amount of number of squats, or, you know, X amount of rep sets, you know, in order for the workout to be effective or qualify. You need to be drenched in sweat, you know, in order for, or you need to be puking, right? For it to be a good workout, or be super sore. Like, none of those things are true in my business anymore. You know, like, no, that's not how we measure success. It's actually how you're feeling, kind of like you asked me. Do you think you're healthier now? Yes. And I do it with my clients. You know, how do you feel? Even I was talking to my 79-year-old client, Judy, and she is just amazing. We just had our 49th workout. Today's our 50th. And I asked her, she's like, Angel, I jumped on a scale and I gained weight. She's like, and I'm like, how do you feel about that? She's like, well, I don't think that's a good thing. And I'm like, let me ask you something. Do you feel better now, today, or 6 months ago when we started? Do you feel healthier? She's like, I absolutely feel healthier. I can pick up Benji, my dog, you know, 26 pounds. I can be more mobile. I can get up and down, you know, without hurt, you know. So I'm like, to me, that is where I'm at now. And I am wanting to do all things that center around that. So for me, and I'm currently working on doing workshops. I'm currently working on trying to create more spaces where we can talk about what is diet culture, because just
Yeah.
that word is so hard. It's so multi-layered that, you know, I want to start having conversations around it, that are easy to understand, and not super complicated.
And like meeting people where they are, because I think about people like your client Judy, who prior to working with you, or if working with a more, I guess, like traditional trainer, she would have probably gone in there And they were like, what are your goals? And she'd be like, I don't know, weight loss, because like, what else do we tell a personal trainer? What other reason do we see a trainer for? But that, right?
Yep.
And in doing all of the things that would require her to lose weight might have actually gotten her to the opposite of where she wanted to be. You know what I mean? When you talk about her being able to like pick up her dog and do the things that she wants to do, it's like, I don't know about you, but like at 79 years old, like I'm not training to try to look more fuckable. I just want to live my life.
Well, you know what's so funny is like I see clients at all ages, all body sizes. They all share the same thing. Like, you know, Judy herself, you know, she's still working through, you know, like what a person should look like. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, 79, fuck it, you know, look however you want to look, eat whatever you want to eat. She's like, you're right, you're right. Which just makes me realize if you don't work on unsubscribing from diet culture, like this will be the rest of your life. You know,
it's the default.
Yes, to a number. I mean, yes, when we ask, what do you want? It's always weight loss and get toned, you know, all the time. Yeah. And you're like, but there's other stuff that, you know, are way more important. But it, yeah, you know, with Judy, I'm like, are you healthier now? She's like, I am. My mental health is better. My happiness is better. I have more joy. I have more energy. You know, I'm happier. I'm like, girl, that's healthier. You know,
yeah.
That's literally health, not metrics that are bullshit like BMI. Don't get me started.
Right. We could go into that all day. I'll just link to a few resources in the show notes. Yeah. And you know, when you're talking about like those, like going for hard things, like, right. You talk about like wanting to train for a marathon again, or like loving the feeling of being under a barbell. I think that's not something that's talked about enough. Like you can be a personal trainer. You can be a participant in fitness, not subscribe to diet culture, and still do things that are challenging. I don't know if you receive the message a lot that like, you know, like it has to be easy or it has to be gentle. And I don't think it's so much like the movement itself that needs to be gentle, but rather that you like are gentle with yourself.
Absolutely. I see it. Oh, I had such a good thought and then I lost my train of thought. Ask me a question, please.
I guess I was more so just commenting about the fact that a lot of times the message, or I think the assumption for people when they hear that you're like an anti-diet personal trainer, is that everything is automatically like gentle and easy, and that you can't do hard things anymore.
I get a lot of, when I say anti-diet culture, they hear anti-health. So like here I'm promoting, you know, they use the word obesity, right? And none of this is true. Which is what frustrates me is how do I provide education for people in a way that they can process it, right? Because to me, I'm not anti-health. Health is one of my values. I value health so much. I also value movement a lot. I value mobility and agility a lot. And when you connect to those values, everything you start doing around those values just builds a much more loving relationship with yourself. So to me, I love lifting hard shit. You know, I love lifting.
Me too.
It's insanely beautiful, this euphoric, you know, feeling you get when you're like, fuck, I just lifted, you know, I deadlifted, you know, 335. Holy shit, that's like my PR, right?
Yeah.
Like doing this and you realize that this body is just so powerful. It's so beautiful. But I've never had a relationship like this with my body, you know?
Yeah.
For me, it's like to feel it and then to also communicate it to others. Like we can lift hard shit. We can do hard shit, you know, but it just doesn't have to be done in the name of pain. Right. Which is like, no, we don't have to be in pain. You know, like if that hurts, let's modify it. Let's do other things. But that doesn't mean that we don't get to enjoy the sport or enjoy movement. You know, it just means you're not fucking subscribing to rules.
Yes. Yes. But especially because so many of the rules are arbitrary and made up. And like, maybe we could get into this whole topic, because we talked about a little bit how the eating disorder, and I mean, the anti-diet space at large, is saturated with mostly thin white women like myself. But I still, like, in spite of the fact of inhabiting that space as that kind of person, I think to take it a step further, a lot of like the quote unquote fitness rules and like the BMI were made for like cis white men.
Yeah.
But talk a little bit more with us about I guess about like your experience being in a space like that and how we can better uplift the voices of BIPOC fitness professionals,
Sure.
people like you.
Yeah, I'm new to all this. I just think beginning of this year. So what are we at? 6, 7 months, of me learning about diet culture, Haze, health at every size, learning about just all things to do with racism as it's tied to this, and for me, I started to like how we connected, right? Was creating a post, being super vulnerable, and then this person's like, connect with this person, connect with that person, and you start networking. You start like, oh my God, there's more people like me, that are out there doing this work. I would love to be part of this community. So to me, it's like I'm seeing how there's a lot of helping uplift each other's voices by, just like today, having me on your podcast. I feel so honored that I get to share my message as a BIPOC, personal trainer. And I think that's what we just got to keep doing. I want to have a podcast as well. You've inspired me, by the way. Thank you so
Yay. So I can do
much.
it.
Yeah, I want to start my own podcast and uplift other voices, who are saying, let's not subscribe, to a abusive, toxic system. Let's subscribe to connecting to your bodies and do, things that you love. So I'm excited to find more spaces, go to more events, and also create spaces as well to build that community.
Yeah, I think that's so important. Oh, what are we missing? I mean, I feel like I could talk to you all day about this, but what else do you want the people to know?
My goodness, I'm grateful for everything we connected on today. I think the message maybe that I can share where I'm at right now is mental health. Like I love mental health support. I'm a huge mental health advocate. I know also recognize how much privilege there is for me to be able to have received mental health support. And I also invited people to check out re free resources, right? Through like Facebook groups, through, community spaces, because to me, I'm just so grateful for it. I wish that I could do more advocacy in this space, because to me, like, there's just no way out of this. Whatever hurt you're going through, you must go through it. And working with a professional on doing that, there's no shame in it, and the other part when it comes to movement, figure out what you like to do. When it comes to movement, I tell my clients, it's like, playing the guitar or taking dance lessons. Like you have to come, you have to practice, right? And then you get better and better as you go. So, if you have movement goals, but the gym is a very intimidating space. We know it to be. It's like you see barbells and dumbbells and, squat racks, and you're like, it's scary.
Yeah.
Want to reach out to those people who are afraid. No More Fear Coaching is the name
Yeah.
of this, because I have, had a very difficult relationship with fear, and helping others work through that is just like one of my joys. So if you're, afraid and you don't know where to start, start small. Like we discount walking, and walking is great,
Yeah.
If you walk once around the block, does that count? Yes. Validating that all movement counts,
Yep.
that part of decolonizing fitness is stop believing that it must be fitness in a very structured way.
Yep.
That fitness can look like so many things. And more than that, find something that you enjoy doing. If like you like to play tennis, go play tennis. If you like to ride your bike, if you like dancing, like anything that you start that you really enjoy will not make it this horrible chore that I grew up with, right? Fitness was punishment, was a chore, was something I had to do because I ate too much. I had to burn off my calories. I would love for other people to have a relationship with fitness, from a place of love, because
Yeah.
it's just so much more enjoyable that way.
And you're like me because I feel like you're very much a multi-passionate mover. Like you also are into dance like I
Yeah.
am.
I
So you have, yeah, so you have, that's a whole nother episode for another day. But you have that passion as well. And
yeah.
you just have all of the other things. And I think the most important thing to nail home for people, like as trainers, we are trained, like it's our job to know and to help you figure out like what the best way to reach XYZ goal is. And we could go all day into like, you know, the nitty gritty of programming variables and all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, like start with that consistency. And, you know, the best kind of movement is the one that you're actually going to do. So like get there and it counts. And, you know, once we do that, I talk about it a little bit like a hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
But you know, get that. And then we can talk about like what's going to be better to help you get from point A to point B. But like, I don't know, we just need to like ditch the rules. At the end of the day, I feel like the rules are keeping a lot of us stuck either in nothing or spiraling in the all.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, it's like, you're either on a hamster wheel or you're like on the couch.
Right. There's nothing in between. Yeah.
No, we need to explore the in between.
You know, I agree. You know, I love that you brought up dance. You know, I love salsa and bachata. I've been dancing salsa and bachata for 15 years now.
Yeah.
And I took some time off and COVID happened, right? We weren't dancing anymore. And I just recently got back into it. And this time coming back into it, it's been a new experience because I'm not metric centric. This time I'm listening to the drums. I'm listening, you know, to the clave. I'm feeling my shoulders. I'm feeling my hips. And I'm like, what a completely different experience.
Yes.
Just to count, you know, like my timing had to be good. I had to be on count. So how do we do more of that? How do we, you know, teach others that connecting with their bodies, that those goals are way more important than any aesthetic or metric, you know, goal. But I mean, that just goes back to like also dismantling all the rules that we've been told, right?
Yeah.
Like, we should look of how we should be, how we should act, right? And if we don't start with breaking those rules, it just becomes really hard for someone to understand anything else but numbers.
Yeah. And that's why I want to have more of these conversations and normalize this, because what you're describing about your experience with dance makes me remember an experience that I had a couple of years ago. I think I made an Instagram post about it, how I happened to notice I was in a tap class because tap dance is my primary style. I was in a class and I noticed like the majority of people in class had Apple watches on and were like fiddling with their watches. And I'm like, people, there are so many things about like tap dancing that cannot be measured by that watch. Like people are worried that it's not registering their workout or they're not closing their rings or, you know, it's not counting all their steps, but like, it doesn't account for those things like the musicality of it and the phrasing and the rhythm and like the full body movement and the style and like the richness of the history of it. Like I could go on and on for days, but
how do we teach that? Do you know what I mean? Like, how do you, I mean, we live in this society where all like the watch for me became a shackle. Since I took it off, by the way, I haven't put it back on.
Yeah.
And life feels so much better, you know, but how do we, I don't know, how do we create these spaces where we talk about your watch is, you know, completely robbing you from the beautiness of, you know, the dance and, you know, the connection between you and the music, you know, pay attention to these things. How do we do that?
I don't know. And I think like for most people, I've actually had an interesting come around. And this is like this is an interesting like side tangent to go on. When it comes to like metrics, like for example, like the data that you can get from say like a Fitbit or an Apple Watch, I used to be like anti everything, like ditch it all because I used to be obsessed about it. But I do think having been in this work for, I think I'm going on like 6 years at this point, maybe a little longer. I feel like I kind of came around to it like 2016. Where are we? 7 years? We're coming up on 7 years.
It's, wow. Yep.
which is nuts. But I feel like there comes a certain place where like you can come around to being able to see those things as neutral data. I think a lot of us, most of y'all just aren't there yet. Like I even have the self-awareness to know that there are certain things that I can see as neutral. Certain things I probably still can't. Like it's a process, but that self-awareness of knowing like where you are with those metrics is really key.
You know, I think about this a lot for my training for this marathon, because at some point you have to know your split. At some point right. You have to know what your distance is when you're coming to train so that you're fully prepared for the full.
Right. You know,
22. So I hear you and I agree with you. You know, it's I don't believe that metrics are bad. It's just how they've been used. You know, it's like
Right.
gym is not a bad place. It's like the platform and delivery that we've, you know, like deliver to people of what, you know, gym and fitness is. So, you know, I personally think that there will be a time for me to use metrics again. But for me, I first need to learn what intuitive movement feels like. Because for
Yeah.
me, it's like I want to have a positive, healthy relationship with metrics. And right now I don't. And I don't
Right.
think you can. I think you
You can't
have
force it either.
to take time off. Like I remember asking another Hayes personal trainer who went through treatment. And you know, I'm like, what do I do like about my obsession with fitness? How do I control this? And she's like, you're not gonna like the answer. You need to stop. You know, just like you have to stop. You have to like just work on doing the work and slowly coming back to fitness from a place of love, you know, and not from a place of metrics. But yeah, I'm excited for this phase and then excited to see what, you know, how that intuitive connection will continue to carry over back when I put my watch back on. And also how I will try to just focus more on just really celebrating that I can run 26.2 miles
Yeah.
versus, you know, like I had to run it at this time or I had to, you know, to be into this, you know, category, whatever.
What's the point of running 20, how, I don't even know how many, 22.6, is that how many?
26.2.
26.2. I'm like, what is even the point of running that many miles at like X speed if it doesn't feel good?
I have
The
so many.
pro like during the process, like what is the fucking point if you're not ignoring the process?
It's that badge of honor that we're told that we're going to wear.
Yeah.
Just did something that nobody else can do. And we also did it for me. Like, I have so many stories of injuries, of running in marathons through my injuries and like painful, painful stories of like, I'm mile 19 and every paramedic I've seen is like, that ligament is torn. Like, you're making it worse. And I'm like, I'm walking barefoot, you know, hunching and, you know, because all in the name of, you know, weight loss and all in the name of toxic masculinity, you know, that I'm a badass, you know, especially like that's what we're surrounded in the fitness space, right? Like,
Yeah.
hard, difficult, big muscles, you know, strength. It's so toxic, you know, tons of toxic masculinity.
The opposite of healthy.
It's the opposite. It's all the opposite, right? Like we have so many layers that we have to work through. But it's not, it's definitely, I look back and I'm like, everything was always about weight loss. And I want to, I'm excited for this journey to be about the love of running. That's
Yeah.
it. Just the love, because there is, you know, I hear people like running sucks. It does. Like when you first start out, it just sucks.
Yep.
And once you start getting a rhythm and your conditioning starts improving, it's so therapeutic. It's really beautiful. You know, you're able to be out there and do something really beautiful with your body. I'm excited. All
Can I
things.
just want to share something for you as I'm hearing you having this enjoyable experience with running and me in a place right now, like as the thin white woman in the corner being like, running sucks, like imagining how torturous that would feel. I wanna point out a very important distinction that you made about how, like, the more you do it, the better you get at it. This has nothing to do with your weight,
Nothing.
people. Like, running fucking is hard until you practice it and until you get better at it. And it has nothing to do with your weight, shape, and size, and everything to do with the fact that the nature of running is it's going to get your heart rate up and it's going to make you sweaty. And the only way to have it do that less is to do it more. And the same
Agree.
is true for any activity. The problem is not your body. The problem is that you need to practice the thing more.
And that's hard to hear and to, for me, I think this, I just didn't think that you can be in a bigger body and run, right? Like that's just, that makes no sense at all, right? Like that's for smaller people. And then when I would do it in a bigger body, I would be doing it only to get into a smaller body, right? But when I look back, like, yeah, I've done all this stuff in bigger body, you know, running marathons, you know, starting them out or whatever, you know, training. You're so absolutely right. Like it's just it's uncomfortable in the beginning, but just like anything that's uncomfortable, like dancing, playing guitar, like then you get the groove and the momentum and you enjoy it. And you're right, like anybody, everybody can do it, you know, at your own pace. Like also, by the way, doesn't have to be running, it could be walking, you know, it
Yeah.
could just walk, jog, or enjoy yourself. But just getting the habit of moving your body, or in a walk, jog, or run in a way that you enjoy, that's the beautiful part, that you enjoy,
Yes.
and no matter what body you're in.
100%. I love it. Ah, Angel, so good. Where can the people find you? How can we work with you? Tell us all the things.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. I appreciate you. I have my own website, nomorefearcoaching.com. You can also find me on IG, and I just started my TikTok account, and so I'm excited to figure out what TikTok I'm going to do. So my handle is at the anti-diet trainer.
Okay. Perfect. So I will link to that in the show notes. And do you just see people locally in Chicago, or are you seeing people virtually as well?
Yeah, virtually as well. So if you're local in Chicago, would love to support you with your fitness goals, and virtually as well. And then I also started a 12-week course on, how to dismantle diet culture, how to take your power back. So
I
excited
love
to
it.
in all different ways.
Yay. All right. Well, I will link to everything in the show notes.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun. I really appreciate you. You're
Yeah,
amazing.
thanks for chatting with us. Have a great day.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Angel as much as I did. After I stopped recording, we continued to talk for about 30 more minutes, and I probably should have kept the record button on, to be honest, because we could just talk all day. But I will link, as I mentioned, to all of the ways that you can connect with and work with Angel in the show notes. And that's all I've got for today. So have a great day, have a great week, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks again for tuning into Tough Cookie Talks. I'm so glad you're here. If you want to learn more about me and how we can work together, visit my website, itsjennaj.com, or follow and tag me on Instagram at itsjennaj. I would love to hear from you. If you liked this episode and want to hear more, make sure you click subscribe and follow along so that you don't miss a single show. Then take a moment and leave me a 5-star rating and review so that we can help this podcast and this message reach even more people. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon.